Clinical visual electrophysiological testing is not currently used outside the hospital eye service. However, newer techniques are being developed which make the test more accessible and adaptable to the optometrist without the need for multiple electrodes and complicated visual stimuli targets. Electrophysiology, measuring the electrical activity in the visual pathway, makes it possible to assess the functioning of different elements of the pathway, and so provides unique information leading to definitive diagnoses of ocular disease. Here to talk to us about electrophysiology is Dorothy Thompson, Director of Education of the International Society for Clinical Electrophysiology of Vision. Dorothy works as a consultant clinical scientist in visual electrophysiology in the ophthalmology department at Great Ormond Street Hospital. She discusses her work with Simranjit Gill.
Hi, Dorothy. Thank you for talking with us today. Please, can you talk to us briefly through the process of clinical electrophysiology as applied to the visual system?
Okay, well, clinical electrophysiology taps into electrical signals that we use to send messages to and from the brain all around the body. And at any time, moment in time, we're really bombarded by lots and lots of signals. So carry a cup of coffee, for example, we're touching it, feeling it, smelling it, seeing it. So our challenge in clinical visual electrophysiology is to make sure that we're just listening to electrical messages associated with the visual pathway. So to do this, what we try and do is get very simple visual stimulation at a set moment in time. And the visual signals are going to be time-locked to that event, and all the other ones are going to be a bit random and start to cancel out. So we start to build up an idea of the visual message. So we pick up these electrical messages using sensors or electrodes, and we put them on both ends of the visual pathway. So we put some scalp electrodes with some conductive paste on the back of the head, and we put some stickers around the eyes at the front. And the outcome of that is a graph that's the change in voltage over time. And we look at the shape of these graphs to see whether there's an alteration from normal or not. And each portion of the graph we can attribute to, for example, a different cell in the retina. So by this way, we can sort of pick out all the sections of the visual pathway and do some very logical diagnostic detective work to find out where in the pathway something's not working so very well. And to make sure we do the tests the same across the world, really, there are some standard ways that the International Society for Clinical Electrophysiology have published. And these work incredibly well. We know across the UK, for example, we had 15 centres collaborating, and a patient can transfer their data anywhere and it's reproducible. But they're time-consuming tests and they're rigorous, so mostly they're done in hospitals.
What extra information does electrophysiology generate that can't be provided by other techniques?
Well, visual electrophysiology has really got two unique selling points, I think. One, it's objective, so patients haven't got to tell us anything about their response behaviourally. And the other one is that it's measuring function. So we're doing this objective idea of how well the visual pathway is actually working with millisecond precision. And that's also important. We can't do that by other techniques. So we've got all these wonderful screening checks that we've got either with visual fields, psychophysics, or we've got these wonderful images these days. But you can get amazing retinal imaging that's got quite normal retinal lamina, but the retina's not working properly. And we can't detect that from the structure. We need these objective checks of function. So it's, I think, uniquely placed to give us this valuable diagnostic information.
It's very valuable. Your current research examines children with rare conditions and their ocular and neurodevelopmental features. Does electrophysiology play a crucial role in your research? And what does it demonstrate in these cases?
No, absolutely. I think electrophysiology is really the key starting block for all our research studies. So we rely upon the electrophysiology to diagnose and identify the children who have altered visual pathway signalling. And one of the main areas of study at the moment that I'm particularly interested in is how photoreceptors communicate with the next cells on, with the bipolar cells. So it's the first junction in the retina that's transmitting the messages. And it's where we start to separate signals of light on versus light off. But what's curious about this is that this synapse can be faulty for different reasons in different systemic diseases. So we've been looking, for example, at Duchenne muscular dystrophy, where patients are often unaware that there's a visual problem. But then in some metabolic diseases, it's the prelude of really nasty progressive retinal dystrophy. And yet again, they've got some other conditions like congenital stationary night blindness, where it's simply confined to the eye. So what we're trying to do is to understand what all these different signals and messages are doing and interacting so we can better get in there and understand how they talk one with the other. So visual electrophysiology is key because it's the only way that we can pinpoint this particular cellular junction and how it's working in the retina. So the electroretinogram in these instances has a very characteristic pattern, and we get a response from the photoreceptors, which is called the A wave, but then it doesn't communicate with the bipolars, the on-bipolars, so we don't get a B wave, and it's called an electronegative ERG. So we've been working with children who show this pattern of electroretinogram and trying to elaborate further the phenotype of their visual problem.
Can you share any other key points and findings from your research?
Well, we've been working with Professor Jane Sowden from the Eye Development and Repair Group at the Institute of Child Health, UCL. And we've got a PhD student working with us, Dennis Fritsch. And we're combining the electroretinography findings with psychophysics and visual evoked potentials, but also gene studies, so that we can start to understand how the proteins that are expressed at this junction start to interact in visual signalling. And we want really to understand how we can better develop treatments to ameliorate the visual dysfunction in some conditions, which seem to go on and progress, and understand why others don't. So as well as looking at the retina, we're also looking, as I explained, at the other end of the pathway, because what we don't know is whether we need a balance between the on and off pathways, which is what we'd imagine, or what happens if you selectively pull off one pathway from another, an on pathway to an off pathway. So it's pretty important, I think, that we understand this junction. We've got lots of studies that are going on across the world trying to rescue photoreceptors, for example. If they don't talk to bipolar cells across the junction, then all that effort is for naught. You know, it's not going to work as well as we hope. And then similarly, if we've got the systemic diseases are going to be treated and we upregulate a particular protein, if that's also expressed in the retina, it could be that we can use our techniques to see how successful that treatment is, to see whether it's changing how the signalling works in the retina as well as in the rest of the body.
What can electrophysiology offer in terms of detection, prevention and treatment of other ocular disorders?
Because it's non-invasive and it's an objective test, it's just perfect for kids. So working here, I think it's really important as part of the wider ophthalmological team for diagnosing all manner of problems and visual potential in children. And it's similarly important for those who can't communicate very well, patients who can't behaviourally give us a response. Often the fundus can look entirely normal and not work properly. And similarly, the MRI of the brain can look normal, but things don't work properly and vice versa. So I think diagnostically, by localising the site of dysfunction, it's really, really very important. So in detection of disease. But we know it's also got an important role to play in adult diagnosis and phenotyping retinal disease. And it's got a role in optic neuritis patients and MS and in inflammatory disease. And there are some inflammatory diseases, for example, birdshot chorioretinopathy. At the moment, they're using electroretinograms to titrate the treatment, so altering how much treatment a patient has. And sometimes also here in new treatments, we've been working with Ashwin Reddy in children with retinoblastoma, looking at ways in which we can deliver melphalan through the ophthalmic artery to see if we can preserve macular function. And we've been using the electrophysiology as an objective measure in these very young children to make sure and see if we can do that. And then in older people who are taking long-term treatments, for example, chloroquinine, then a multifocal electroretinogram is being used to look for the paracentral scotoma and identifying that early. So I think we've got quite a lot of area of influence and importance in hospital practice. But I think excitingly for the community practice, I think we're now starting to look at the more common causes of visual impairment, for example, glaucoma and diabetes. And I think there is a big potential for tapping into those and using electrophysiology for those diseases.
I understand you now have access to a handheld electrophysiology device. Can you describe this and its use?
Actually, we've had it on trial. We don't have access, but I'm excited about it because it's being used really across the world to great effect. And up until now, electrophysiological equipment's been really quite bulky and quite expensive and confined to specialised units. This handheld equipment is probably about the size of a tonometer, and it has a small Ganzfeld at the top of it, but the handle actually has all the gubbins that you need in it. And what is extraordinary about it, I think, is that it's got a pupillographer in it, and you can actually make sure that you deliver the same retinal illuminance with a flash without dilation. They have a sticker electrode which has all the electrodes you need on it. So it's integrated circuits. It's just like a strip sticker that you can use. It's being applied for specific purposes. There are specific electrophysiological responses that are altered in specific diseases. So we know that, for example, a flicker ERG is really sensitive to ischemia. And this equipment was designed, first of all, with that in mind, looking at the large population of diabetics and the difficulties detecting vision-threatening diabetic retinopathy. And you can do that with the timing of this response. Just recently, these workers in the States, April Ma and et al., they've published their data showing really good sensitivity and specificity of using this equipment with the flicker timing and the pupil response that is ahead, if you like, or on par with the EDT, the seven pictures that you get in the EDT-RS screening. So I think it's very exciting that in 2.5 minutes, you get a functional objective assessment that we can add in to everything else to do with diabetic screening and be a bit more specific and sensitive in who we refer on. So I think that's rather good.
Do you see such developments in instrumentation being of use to optometrists based in the community practice?
Well, I do very much. I think for the specific conditions, I think the fact that this is handheld is relatively inexpensive. You can do a test in a very short amount of time, and it's functional and it's objective. I think we're going to start to see it being adopted more and more. I think for glaucoma as well, there is a part of a cone ERG that is very sensitive to ganglion cells. So I think for diabetes and for ganglion cell disease and glaucoma, we're going to see the application of this. It doesn't take long to do, and I think you don't need a great deal of training to do it. I think it can be readily applied, acceptable to the patients. I think it's right time to have these tests in practice. But I think there is a challenge, because I do think that we need to make sure that we're supporting people in practice with education for a refresher for what visual electrophysiology is about. Because in addition to things that are well validated, like the technique that I've been chatting about, there are also other desktop things around that are black box. And I think it's important that we don't rely on a black box to give us a number. We have to know that we can critically appraise these bits of equipment. So I think it's very exciting. I think, yes, we will have these bits of equipment in optometric practice. The time's right for us to expand our scope of practice. But I think we need to back it up with some continuing education as well.
Thank you, Dorothy and Sim Ranjit.